No mai, haere mai, ki tēnei hōtaka. Welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Today, more than 150 experts called on the government to legalise all drugs in Aotearoa. After 50 years, the current model is not working, they say. So, a snap panel poll today. Already had, as you can imagine, a big response on this. Do you support the legalisation of all drugs in New Zealand? Yes or no? Why or why not? Text 2101. Also on the show today, a public uproar about domestic violence in Australia. The government there has pumped over 1 billion New Zealand into the issue. We discussed that on the program. And apparently, just 30% are happy with their Mazda 6. But the happiest drivers are those who have a Nissan Leaf. What is it about a Nissan Leaf that makes you happy? Because it can't be the range, surely. We have an EV expert on to explain. Also, the Eurovision semi-finals, they start today. We check in. So you can text me 2101. You can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. With me, Sarah Sparks, founder of Sparks Consulting, serving cup of Māori equity and justice issues. Sarah Tanakwe, welcome to the panel.
Kia ora, Wallace.
And Gary Moore, former mayor of Christchurch, proud advocate of the South Island. Gary, welcome.
Kia ora.
Sarah and Gary with me today. Now, so it is International Harm Reduction Day. And as I said, more than 150 experts from here and around the world called on the government to legalise all drugs in the country. This news is from the newly formed Harm Reduction Coalition Aotearoa presented their letter today calling on Prime Minister Chris Luxon to end drug prohibition and legalise all drugs. They said that it is clear that after 50 years, the Misuse of Drugs Act has failed to reduce drug use, and it's time for a new approach. It was supported by health, medical, psychological and criminal experts from 14 countries. As I said, the snap panel poll, do you support the legalisation of all drugs in New Zealand? Yes or no? 2101. With us is Harm Reduction Coalition Aotearoa founding member Wendy Allison, who received a New Zealand Order of Merit last year, medal rather, for services to harm reduction. Wendy, kia ora.
Kia ora.
So explain a bit more just why the rationale for this.
Well, drug prohibition has been a part of our world for nearly 50 years, and in that time we have seen increasing drug use and increasing drug harm. So regardless if your goal is to reduce drug harm or drug use, it has clearly failed to work. It's the notion of criminalising somebody to prevent them from participating in a behaviour that people have been participating in for thousands and thousands of years is very, very strange when you think about the negative impacts that that has actually had in terms of criminalisation of people who otherwise would not have a criminal record, removing access to health for people, the costs to the economy, and particularly in our country, the marginalisation of Māori. It's part of the reason that 50% of the people in prisons are Māori, is because of the unequal way that the drug laws have been applied. So it has been used as a way to marginalise a lot of people and harm people. And it has done nothing to prevent the harm that it claims to be preventing. So it just seems very silly to continue throwing money down this black hole when it's clearly not having any effect.
Okay, I've got more questions, but clearly Sarah and Gary will have questions too. You first, Sarah.
Yeah, this is such a complex area. There's no silver bullet. What I guess from my perspective as a parent, I've got a young gentleman down in Otago University. And, you know, for me, it actually serves the family well that it's illegal not to smoke pot. Just saying, and I support that. But in saying that, context matters too, because, you know, I understand the need for medicinal cannabis for those people who get it prescribed through their doctors. So, yeah, can you explain more? How would this work on the collective level when you're dealing with, you know, intergenerational impacts?
Well, in terms of the situation regarding cannabis, we're not just talking about cannabis. We're talking about all drugs.
Yeah, I realise that.
The policy that is causing the problems is not related to a specific substance. It is related to this blanket idea that prohibition will stop people from using drugs, and if it doesn't, then we should punish them in one way or another, because it is clearly not stopping people from using drugs. And what it is doing is preventing those people who do have trouble when they use drugs from actually getting the help that they need. So somebody in a community who has problematic drug use issues is going to take longer to admit they have a problem. They're going to take longer to speak with people about it. They're going to take longer to be able to get any help under prohibition. And what we're proposing is that we remove those barriers for people getting help and allow those who don't have problematic drug use issues to govern their own drug use as they already are.
So much response here. All drugs is too much too soon. Start with marijuana and see where the stats go. And if the public is mature enough to cope, absolutely no. I see the effects of drug use every day around my town. Homeless folk off their face on meth. Another one says, absolutely yes, addiction is a real serious issue. It's got to be treated as a health issue, not a criminal issue. Let's go to Gary.
Wendy, I do disagree with you on people who are having trouble with drugs. There are any number of agencies that actually work extremely well with them, and I think that's a sideshow or a distraction. So what you're proposing is that if I need heroin, I go to the local pharmacy to get it?
Is that a question?
Yes.
Okay. Can I first respond to your initial statement? Approximately 50% of the people who seek help for drug issues in this country actually get it in any real time. So I would dispute the idea that there are enough services. We are spending four times as much money criminalising people and putting them in jail for drugs as we are helping people with drug issues. And in respect for heroin, yes, heroin is such a drug that most of the harms associated with it are actually associated with someone who is dependent on it having to seek it in the illicit market. And so consequently, if someone who was having that problem were able to go to the pharmacy and have a harm reduction talk with someone, with a licensed professional, get clean gear, clean needles to use it, and not have to buy it on the street, they would not be coming into contact with the criminal underworld, they would be not taking those health risks, and they would be coming into contact with the very health professionals that we're trying really, really hard to get people to approach now.
You can get clean needles at the needle exchange in Christchurch right now.
Yes, we're talking about heroin-assisted therapy, which is something that was started in the 1980s in the recession in the UK. There was a trial of heroin-assisted therapy, which was prescribing heroin to people who had difficulties with dependent use and were unable to get off heroin. They were prescribed clean gear on a regular basis, and as a result of that, they stopped having to go to the criminal market to purchase their drugs. They stopped having to use gear that had things in it that were not heroin, that was harming them, and they were able to get control of their lives because they were no longer surrounded by that criminal underworld, and their health was improving and people were starting to voluntarily come off heroin. And this program got shut down because the United States government didn't like the UK relaxing the drug laws. It wasn't because it wasn't working, it was because of political ideology. And I feel that if we are letting political ideology get in the way of actually helping people, then we're doing it wrong.
All right, so I've got a question for you, Wendy. So how would it work? So a fit-for-purpose act run through the Ministry of Health, is that right, to regulate the legal supply of all psychoactive substances?
Yes, that's the guts of it, yeah.
Sarah? You're still a bit unsure about it, aren't you?
Oh, look, you're talking to a woman who had three children without any drugs. I'm at that extreme. I believe
in... So you're a big no to this?
A big, huge no. And, you know, there are issues in our collective where, sadly, there is addiction. And within my own family, we've suffered losses, and I mean terrible losses from addiction. So for me, it's a no-go.
Such a huge response to this. I can't wait to see what the panel poll is. Keep going, Sarah.
Yeah, well, I just believe that is this wise?
What?
And any decision that's enshrined in legislation actually has a, you would expect, an endurance factor. And I just don't believe at the moment the balance of evidence dictates a all wholesale legalise all drugs.
Wendy.
There's definitely room for measuring the legislation, perhaps, to bring it into the current context of society. But wholesale is, for me, it's a no-go.
Yes, I understand a number of people, in fact, a significant number of people will be alarmed at the notion of a legally regulated market for psychoactive substances. But I would point out that we already have legally regulated markets for psychoactive substances that are not illegal, and the world has not ended. And I would also speak to a larger issue, because we talk about homeless people with addiction problems, but throughout history, every time we have had situations of increasing inequality in societies, it has come with drug issues. And so I would suggest that people with addiction issues who are living on the edges of society, marginalized, traumatized, etc., these people are a symptom, not of drug problems. Drug problems are a symptom of larger issues, which we should also be addressing.
Can I raise this, Wendy, because a couple of people have said this, and by the way, just a massive response from the listeners there. Will might have to do a take two on this issue, actually. But here's one. Canada did this recently, Wendy, but it completely failed to implement and all of the clinics and other services related to substance abuse itself. This led to the current opioid crisis in many cities there. Portugal did this too, but they also implement extra policies and services allowing easier access for addicts to receive help. I'm for legalization only in the case where robust services for drug addicts are in place and easier to access. A quick response there, Wendy.
I absolutely agree. There is no way that laissez-faire capitalism should be applied to the legalization of drugs. There's a spectrum here. At one end, you have laissez-faire capitalism, where people can buy drugs whenever they want and wherever they want, and nobody wants that. At the other end, we have extreme criminalization, and in the middle is where the most harm can be reduced. And we believe, the people who signed this letter believe, that having drugs be legal and well regulated based on evidence, based on well-being, and based on the health of society is a much more likely way to reduce harm than the failed criminalisation approach that we've taken for the last 50 years.
Briefly, Gary, we've got to move on.
Wendy, I understand where you're coming from. I personally joined Sarah in saying no at this stage, but I think that the first step would be for the health authorities, when somebody's picked up by the police, to be referred to the health authorities first, and the changes to be driven from that, not the overall legalisation.
Okay.
I just can't agree with
Wendy,
that.
I really appreciate your time, and thanks for bringing this to the attention of the panel.
Absolutely no problem. You have a good night.
That is the Harm Reduction Coalition Aotearoa founding member Wendy Ellison, received a New Zealand Order of Merit last year for service to drug harm reduction. This is on International Harm Reduction Day. Experts around the world have called on the government here to legalise all drugs in New Zealand. Okay, so snap panel poll. Our two panellists here, they've ticked no. What would you tick? 2-1-0-1 results at 6:45 tonight on the panel. It is 6:23. There has been a public uproar about domestic violence in Australia. 27 women killed in 2024 alone. In response, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says his government will invest almost $1.1 billion NZ in a leaving violence payment for women fleeing violent relationships and to push through measures to counter extremist views about women online. It's become a national issue in Australia right now. What about here? Dr. Nicola Atwell is the chairperson of the Family Violence Death Review, which focuses on family violence homicides in Aotearoa. Dr. Atwell, kia ora. Are you there, Nicola?
I am.
Oh, good to have you here. Looking across the Tasman, I mean, shocking statistics. An increase by nearly 30% in 2022 to 2023 compared to the previous year. Quite a shock to read.
Yep.
How is New Zealand faring? Yeah, keep going.
It's difficult to compare because of the different population base, but we have a serious problem with violence in New Zealand, and women are disproportionately the victims. From 2009 to 2021, there were 355 family violence-related killings, and of those, 190 were women and girls, and that's only 30 to 50% of the homicides against women, and we don't know about the homicides that are not family harm because there is no, we're not accurately capturing or investigating those at this stage. So it's a significant number of women lose their lives every year in New Zealand.
Let's jump to the panel. Sarah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I absolutely agree. And I have great hope that Te Reo Rerekura, the 25-year strategy that the government launched under the previous minister, is actually going to bear fruits in the long term. What do you think, Nicola? I'm very concerned too, being Māori, that two out of three Wahine Māori are actually affected by violence in this country.
When we look at the situation of Wahine Māori, we have to factor in colonisation because there is no evidence of this kind of gender disparity pre-colonisation. Basically, gender disparity is a colonial import. And Māori have mobilised around addressing the intersection of violence and colonisation and are starting to make some serious progress, I believe, in terms of addressing the situation at a community level. I think we've got a long way to go in the Pākehā world, and I think that underreporting is still a significant factor among the New Zealand European population, and we aren't in the same place in terms of having an analysis of what's needed to reduce violence.
Gary.
Well, we should all be working towards removal of violence in families. But I do question your data about that there was no violence before Pākehā came here. I think that is just, there's nothing to back that up. But one of the things that you wrote that I did take exception to is it said all men benefit from the fact that violence exists because it maintains the power and balance between men and women. That is nonsense. It may apply sometimes, but the last thing I would be thinking about is maintaining any power I had, if I had any, through violence. I mean, what we've got to do is move beyond hysteric comments like that and say, how do we keep home safe? And which is what Sarah's basically saying, that the last government's program is what we've all got to get in behind. But sort of silly statements just split people instead of unifying them.
Nicola.
It is not a silly statement. If a woman is walking down the street at night, she does not know if the man behind her is a nice man like you or a man who could be a threat to her. And she makes her decisions on that basis. So lots of women do not go out alone at night. A lot of parents are very afraid of what's happening, and that means they put limits on what the young girls can do and when they can do it, because there is this unknown. And we have to accept that there is a disparity, and that as long as that power balance is in place, you only have to look at the fact that bullying is rife in our employment, in lots of employment environments. That is a similar abuse of power. And again, there are women bully in positions of power, but that's because we have a culture that has allowed that to go unchallenged.
Let's go to Sarah. Do you want to respond to this, Sarah?
On the same continuum, at the extreme end, you have family harm.
Right.
I was going to say, doesn't this require a change in value system? Like, I was reflecting during the campaign, the election campaign. This should have been right up there, given our data. And it wasn't.
Right.
And it should have been spoken about a lot more, because this is about an integrated approach, don't you think, with the government and community and tangata whenua. I always believe that the role of women, you know, in Te Ao Māori, we are sacred and we're revered because of our what we called whare tangata, which is our womb that brings in the next generation. You know, if we don't get it right now, we're harming, you know, it's our next generation and a generation after that. So, I always think, isn't it a change in value system that's required here?
There is definitely, there are values that need to be addressed, and there needs to be much more conversation about what's underpinning these dynamics. And I do think that conversation has started in the Māori world around exactly the issue that you've identified. I don't think we're in the same place in the Pākehā world yet. And we've seen some horrendous negativity expressed, particularly to female politicians. Now, that going unchecked is a message that it's okay to do this stuff.
I just want to bring up one thing brief before we go, Dr. Atwell, and that is one thing I have to bring up because Australia has really focused on it, and this is the extremist views about women ramping up online. They've really identified that. One person actually I won't say his name, but there's been one particular influencer that has come to mind who's extremely misogynistic and has actually apparently has a bit of a following amongst schoolboys here in New Zealand. Then you've got trends like in New York where men just go up from behind a woman and punch them in the face for no reason. And just yesterday, just 200 metres from here, one guy did the same, walking along and smacked his elbow into the face of an 8-year-old woman. She's in a critical but stable condition hospital. Yep. Completely known, the misogyny is really seeping through. What's your response to that?
Yeah, there is a significant level of concern about the role of those influencers. If you pair that with the extremely ready available of pornography, and we are hearing some concerning data about the number of young people accessing both those kinds of material, you have a generation of young men with extremely distorted views of relationships and of women, and we're seeing evidence that young women are having to manage that. Mm. Now, as a grandparent of 3 granddaughters, that really concerns me, that this is happening. I was part of second wave feminism, where we tried to call out these negative attitudes and identify the issues that underpin violence, where my granddaughters should not be fighting the battles that I fought 30, 40 years ago.
Nicola, kia ora, thank you for your time. Nicola Atwell there, chairperson of the Family Violence Death Review. It focuses on family violence, homicides in New Zealand, reacting to that $1 billion plus pumped into domestic violence in Australia. It's become a huge issue there. 27 to 7, the panel, RNZ National.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.